Welcome to Vocal Point on GraceNetRadio.com. Each week, we will examine issues that concern all Christians living in today's culture. Politics, theology, world affairs, citizenship, ethics, and personal responsibility. And now, your host of Vocal Point, Jerry Newcomb on GraceNetRadio.com.
And good afternoon. This is Jerry Newcomb live, and this program, at least part one, will be in that category of personal responsibility. I figure since this is so early in the year, we think about New Year's resolutions and so forth, that we think about making better use of our time, accomplishing more for the Lord, Lord willing, in the year of our Lord 2014. Well, Tommy Barnett is a pastor of a large church in Phoenix. There's also a sister congregation in the Los Angeles area. And he's a very busy and successful pastor, but he's the author of a new book called The Power of a Half Hour, Take Back Your Life 30 Minutes at a Time. And this is published by a division of Random House, actually, Water Book Press. Pastor Tommy, welcome to the program.
Well, what an honor to be here, Jerry.
Well, thank you. Now, first of all, tell us the genesis of this book. It's unusual in the sense of a lot of books about making good use of your time, you know, even as unto the Lord. But I don't think I've ever seen one that's related to just the issue of using it one half hour at a time.
Yes. Well, you know, we are all very, very busy in this culture that we live in. And at the same time, we all have great dreams and visions that we believe are in our heart, but we usually never accomplish them because we run out of time. But I found out that you can tell what a man is like by how that man or woman spends their half hour, the wasted time. That's what the book's about. Waiting for a plane at the airport, waiting for a doctor's appointment, waiting for some important event. We have an idea that that half hour between two major events is wasted time. Time we just kind of zone out for a while to get ready for the next meeting. So pastoring, you know, a very large congregation in Phoenix and then being the chancellor of a major university, when the opportunity opened up for L.A., we have a great place called the Dream Center, a hospital we bought 15 stories high, 1,700 rooms in it, to start outreach to hurting people of Los Angeles. I said to myself, I haven't got time. I can't do that. But, you know, I found in life that you do not grow by subtraction. You grow by multiplication. If you want to get stronger, you use more weights, not less. I found out that there was a whole new block of time waiting for me in my wasted time. So every major event that I've put on myself when I thought I had no more time has caused me to grow and has opened up a new world for me. I'm saying that most people don't reach their dreams because, first of all, they haven't got a time to just sit down and write down their dreams a half hour, maybe three times a week, and muse upon them. It works in relationships. It works in the vision. It works in reaching out and help people reaching their dreams. I have found that it's opened up a whole brand new world by using the wasted time.
Huh. So, for example, if I assume you fly sometimes in the airports and so forth, what do? Bring paperwork with you? Bring scripture verses you're trying to memorize? Portions of a manuscript you're working on? You know, how do you use up that time? Evangelism with strangers?
Yes, I have penned 11 books, and all of them were written on the wasted time. Mm. Written in an airplane, half hour here, half hour there. On the plane, I always have material with me. I always keep a book in my briefcase. Every little time I have, I use to read a book. And some people think, man, you've put yourself under bondage. Just the opposite is true. I've learned that if I will use my half-hour segments in life, it releases me all kinds of time. I'll give an example. When I come home at night, I have time with my children because I've learned how to use the half hour. I know a lot of single mothers will say to me, well, Pastor, I work real hard all the day, then I have a family to care for and cook for and watch after. I'm so tired. How can I have an extra half hour? I always think of the story of Susan Wesley. She had 18 children. Her husband died. She was left with providing for them and taking care of them. Yet this woman, every week, gave a half hour to an hour to every one of her children, singly, individually, and teaching them things like moral and character. Well, she raised 18 great children, two of them, which were Charles and John Wesley, that the founders of the great Methodist denomination. I'm saying to you that getting up an hour, 30 minutes earlier, turning off the television at night, we can find time for the things that we value.
That's so true. In fact, Groucho Marx once said, as far as television is concerned, he said, I find TV very educational. Every time somebody turns on the TV set, I go in the other room and read a book.
Yeah, that's a great one. Let me tell you a little story, a very quick story that I think you'll enjoy. I was invited to speak at a conference in Belfast, Ireland. It was a very small church, and been my church and my obligations are very busy, so I generously wrote back and said, please excuse me, I cannot fit this into my time schedule at this time. They wrote back and said, but Pastor, we believe that God wants you to come and be there. Well, when they give me the God card, I'm pretty vulnerable. So I accepted the invitation. On the way over, I thought, my goodness, this little conference, very small. I don't even know if they can pay my plane ticket over and back. What a foolish man I've been. But just before I left, I got an email from a man I didn't know a thing about, didn't know who he was, what he was. But he asked me to give 30 minutes to him for a cup of coffee before I spoke that night. Now, I don't do that because, I have jet lag, and I just have time to clean up, and I'm tired and weary, and I want to get my thoughts together.
So this is taking place in Ireland, this
is Ireland.
Request for the coffee. Okay.
But something said, do it. And I've learned that when I have those little whispers,
yes,
that
obey
I need
them.
To obey. So
yes.
I gave him 30 minutes of time. He said, I want you to help me to start a dream center. Help me reach out to the hurting people of Belfast. I said, I'll be glad to. And then he said, tell me about the dream center. And I told him. I told him how we have 15 floors and how we have 7 to finish. And when we finish it, we can hold 1,500 people off the streets. He said, Pastor, how much would it cost to do each floor? I said, well, round figures, about $1 million. He said, Pastor, when you get home, there'll be $1 million check waiting for you. Now, I'd heard that before. The check was in the mail.
Uh-huh.
But when I got home, there was $1 million check in my office. I gave that man 30 minutes, and we started a ministry for him there. And he gave back to us an entire floor that takes care of families that are on the street now.
Wow.
When you give away and help somebody else reach their dream
yeah.
for a half hour, it comes back, as the Bible said, pressed down, shaken together, and running over.
Wow. Tell us a story that you tell about in the book about Jim Baker, who put this in context. In 1987, he fell big time as a televangelist and even went off to prison for, was convicted for embezzlement and other things. So
yes.
Tell us about you and your quiet time and Jim Baker.
Well, I was praying one morning. I gave a half hour every morning, 15 minutes. I promised the Lord in the morning that I would talk to God before I talked to even anybody in my family. So I went through the 15 minutes, and then I had 15 minutes of Bible reading, and I was reading where I was hungry, and you fed me. I was thirsty. You gave me to drink. And it goes on, and then it says, I was in prison, and you visited me. And I thought, Lord, I'm doing pretty good about feeding people and clothing people and housing people. But this prison thing, and that little whisper said, what about Jim Baker? Why don't you go visit him? And I said to myself, God, that'll kind of ruin my good reputation to go visit Jim Baker, because at that time, he was not thought of very highly. The Holy Spirit kind of spoke to me and said, well, your reputation is not that hot anyway, so go ahead. I went to Minnesota, got in, rented a car, went to the prison. When I walked in, he began to weep. He said, no one visits me. He said, I got a visit from Billy Graham and now from you. Well, I felt pretty good then because I was in good company if Billy Graham visited. Yeah. And I spent a day with him. When the evening came, I had to leave. Before I leave, he said, Pastor, would you visit my son? He said, my son is on drugs. He dropped out of school when I went to prison at the age of 13. He can't read or write. He's gone astray. Would you please reach out to him and invite him to be in your master's commission in Phoenix? So I did.
Well, by the way, was his son living in the Phoenix area or something?
No, his son was living in Florida.
Oh, okay.
I contacted his son. His son didn't want to come. He was somewhat bitter. Years later, Jim got out of prison. He called me and I said, how are you doing? Well, not very good. He said, I'm living in one of Billy Graham's little cottages that he made available. He said, would you please get my son to come to Phoenix and put him in your discipleship program? I said, but Jim, he doesn't want to come. He said, he's living with me now and he'll come. Well, he came. The first day when I gave the invitation on a Sunday, he accepted Christ. He started a ministry called the Skateboard Ministry. Huh. Well, we have a pastor school every year in February that's coming up. I always have three or four people to tell about their ministry. Well, he came to me and said, I want to be the one that tells about my ministry. I said, but I'm trying to protect you. Even my church doesn't know that you're Jim Baker's son. I don't want the news media on you. But he said, I want to come out of the closet. Well, we had 7,000 people in the audience that night. Jim Baker heard that his son was going to give his testimony. And he said, I want to come out and see him. But then he said, no, that'll hurt me. That'll hurt you, Pastor. They'll write his story, and that shame will come upon you. He said, but what if I come and sit in a back room and nobody will see me? And finally I said, look, Jim, a man has a right to hear his son give his testimony. I'll send you a ticket. Come on out. Now, I want you to get the scene. The building is filled with 7,000 pastors, which have all been hurt by his scandal.
Mm-hmm.
No one knew who this little boy was giving his testimony.
Mm.
When he gave his testimony, he said, I'm Jim Baker's son. I then stepped up and said, Jamie, your dad wanted to come, but he didn't want to bring shame upon the church and me. But Jamie, I said to your dad, come on out. Now, Jamie didn't know he was there. Nobody in the audience didn't know he was there. The only one that knew that Jim was there was my wife. I said, your dad is here. Dad, stand up. And he was at the back of the building. And the two of them ran together, the prodigal son and his dad, and they embraced.
Mm.
I didn't know how the audience was going to respond. But 7,000 pastors stood up and began to applaud. And they wept. And they sobbed. The applause went on for about 15 or 20 minutes. And then I said, kneel in front of us. We're going to pray for you both. And I want every hurting pastor in this audience to come and kneel around them. Thousands of pastors flocked to the front. And we had a prayer meeting that lasted almost all night. I got up the next day to speak, and it turned into another prayer meeting. Jim Baker came and lived at the Dream Center for 2 years. Nobody else wanted him in their city.
Hmm.
You know, all we have at the Dream Center anyway is hurting people. And he wrote the book, I Was Wrong. He was just a servant out here. And his life was turned around because of that little 30 minutes on the phone that I listened to Jim and was obeyed the voice of God. I want to tell you, folks, 30 minutes of helping somebody else reach their dream always comes back in great joy.
Hmm. By the way, just to give this a context, I take it this would have been about maybe 15 years ago or so?
I'm sure, yes.
It something was at like least that. That. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, I
and
see.
Many people say that night was the greatest moment they'd ever seen in their lifetime. And to this day, I've never seen a moment like that in my life.
Wow.
When a group of pastors opened their heart and forgave a man that caused them a lot of grief.
Hmm.
And it was a glorious, wonderful healing night.
Wow. All right, we're talking right now with Tommy Barnett, who's a pastor of a large church in Phoenix. It has a sister affiliate in the Los Angeles area, and he's written a book called The Power of a Half Hour, Take Back Your Life 30 Minutes at a Time. And there's a fantastic quote you have in this book from Chuck Swindoll. I've seen it before, but it's just so good, and it's something that we can all take to heart, and that is, how important our attitude is. And I love that quote, life is 10% circumstances, 90% how we react to those circumstances. But talk about how the important attitude is in this equation.
Well, that attitude is literally everything. You know, I believe that everyone that ever lives will have an opportunity to do something that could change the course of the earth. In other words, maybe they encourage somebody that has greatness within them. Maybe they were there at a certain time, like that young lady you might remember, I think was in Atlanta, in which the man who had murdered a couple of people broke into her home, and she was reading the Purpose-Driven Life book.
Yeah, I remember that.
And it changed her life. It changed the world. And I believe that we all, if we will have an attitude that every day is important, every 30 minutes is important, to just brighten somebody's day. I spend my life just looking for those opportunities, looking for the miracle in the house. Hmm. That needs to be our attitude. You know, I was speaking at the National Black Pastors Conference several years ago in Washington, D.C. I was the only Caucasian on the program, and I said to the moderator, why in the world did you invite me? Everybody knows these great black preachers are the greatest preachers in the world. You've just set me up for failure. Well, the moderator, he laughed and said, well, we invited you because you have a black heart. Well, I took that as a great compliment, and I preached my black heart out that night. Sitting in that audience was a little pastor whose church was about to go under, less than 100. He was struggling. That night I preached a sermon that I preach entitled, The Miracle in the House. The idea is everything that we need to build a great church is right there in our house. The think tank, the creativity, it's there. He got so excited, he later told me that he thought he was going to have a heart attack. And he said, God, if you get me out of here alive, I'm going to be the miracle in this house. He went back to his little church, and it began to explode. He got on national television and spoke, stirred the nation. Several years later, he invited me to speak at his first pastor's conference, in which he told that story. And he said, I decided that if I ever had a pastor's conference, Pastor Barnett would be the opening speaker. You might have heard of him. His name was T.D. Jakes.
Wow.
I gave a 30-minute sermon that touched his life. He was the miracle that is in this house. Our attitude should always be as we approach a day. Who knows who I'm going to come in contact with? A word of encouragement, a word of help along the way. See, I believe that when you give your life away, oh, the benefits are great, because all great miracles I've experienced in my life have come out of relationships, mm-hmm. of a 30-minute period here and a 30-minute period there.
Well, you know, when you think about it, look how Jesus Christ changed the world through investing his time, his life, for about 3 years, maybe 3.5 years, in those 12 disciples. And one of them finked out, you know, but still, it's an amazing thing. And then all the various encounters he had, sometimes it would be maybe only half an hour, sometimes even less than half an hour.
Yeah.
And we're still talking about it. Time is measured through Jesus Christ. We're waiting for Jesus' return. You know, everything centers around him, and his coming into our world just changed everything. And but it all comes in these half-hour chunks. Now, you told a story in your book. You were a pastor in a smaller context, I guess in Iowa or something.
Yes.
And there was every time you would go even to a gas station, you would try and go out of your way to lift up the spirits of the clerk, or that kind of thing. Tell that story.
Well, you know, I believe that Christians should spread joy and gladness wherever they go. And I'll tell you one thing I feel about that. I feel like that when we do that, the one that gets a benefit is the one that spreads the joy. You know, when we do that, happiness comes to us. We want to make somebody else happy, and happiness says, you know, I'm glad to meet your friend, but I'd like to meet you, the one that brings joy. It's a little simple story, but in Davenport, I went to a filling station one day, and I went there all the time to get gas and a few necessities. And a member from my church went there, and I just left it, and he walked in the place. And the man who had who owned the place said to that member, you know, I don't know who that fella is, but he comes in here about every other day to get gas. And, you know, every time he leaves this place, We feel so good. He makes us all feel so good. He spread so much joy in this place. Hmm. When my member told me that story, I thought, you know what? It's a joy to spread joy. It's a joy to make gladness. It's a joy for me to spend my life trying to help other people find their dream in life. Hmm. Just a brief story I think you'll really like. I feel that everybody ought to sit down and make a bucket list, a 30-minute bucket list of things they want to do before they die. And the reason I feel that way, there was a man in London who heard about the Dream Center. He came to the Dream Center, a very wealthy man, must have been worth near $1 billion. His life was changed at the Dream Center. So once a month, he began to fly to church here, once a month, to attend church over here. One day he called me and said, Pastor, could I meet with you 30 minutes before church? I thought, boy, if you'll fly once a month to come to church, I can do that. He said, I just saw a movie called The Bucket List. You know the movie of two guys in the same room, both of them dying with cancer, one rich, one poor. They both were despondent when one day the rich man walked in. He saw a piece of legal paper wrapped up on the floor. He picked it up, and it said at the top, Bucket List. And then it said, jump out of an airplane. Drive a race car. He went on down the list, things like kiss the most beautiful girl in the world. And he said, the rich man to the poor guy, what is this? The guy said, well, that's a list of things I want to do before I die. I kick the bucket, but I guess we'll never get to do it. And the rich man smiled and said, why not? I've got the money. I've got the jets. Let's do it. Now, the rich man said to me, Pastor, when I saw that movie, I thought of you. He said, I've got all the money in the world, and I've got the jets. Just take some time off, and I want you to write your bucket list, and we'll do anything you want to do. We'll go anywhere you want to.
Wow.
Money is no object. Well, boy, I never had an offer like that.
Wow.
I sat down with my legal, and I began to write down, what do I want to do? And I thought, and I thought, and I thought. I thought, man, I don't want to jump out of an airplane. The Bible said, lo, I am with you. And I thought, I don't want to drive a race car. My wife scares me enough the way it is. And then I thought, I've already kissed the most beautiful girl in the world. And if I kiss another one, my wife will kill me. And I thought, and I thought, and I thought, Jerry, and for the life of me, I couldn't think of anything I'd rather do than feed another hungry kid, rescue another girl from human trafficking, give another invitation to win someone to Jesus Christ.
Wow.
It changed my life in making that bucket list.
Mm.
And that's what, 3 times a week minimum, I go to the mountain behind my church, and I just sit there and muse and meditate and contemplate for about 30 minutes.
Mm.
My dreams, what God has ahead of me. And the older you get, the more you need a vision of the finish line, how you plan to finish your life. I know how I plan to finish. I'm 76. I've been in the ministry 60 years,
wow.
Married for 50 years. And I know how I'm going to finish. And I want to finish strong. And you can do that if you'll take 30-minute increments and begin to think about your life and your dreams and your purpose.
Mm. You know, it's interesting, too. You were saying earlier how during downtime, a little half hour here, waiting at the airport, or half hour there, waiting for a meeting to start, or those kinds of things, that you could actually do a lot of your writing for the books. You made me think about Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who for years was a prisoner in the Soviet Gulag, and yet he had different books in his mind that he was essentially writing as he was experiencing these terrible things in Stalin's, prisons. And then when he finally got out later, he was able to put pen to paper and so forth. But imagine that, where you're writing, but you don't even have the luxury of writing it down on piece of paper, you know, on paper. It's amazing. So we can, frankly, there are a lot more things we could do for God's glory and others' good than we are doing. Because, frankly, we're very lazy, and I'm, you know, present company included here.
Well, Jerry, you said something was very important. You mentioned how those books were in his heart. They were not written down. You know, the famous artist, the one who wrote the book, the One-Minute Manager, He's a friend of mine. I ran this idea about the power of a half hour, and he said, it's brilliant. You need to do it. It's a great thing. And then he said something to me. He said, I meet people all the time who have a great idea for a book, and they tell me about it, but they never do it. Mm-hmm. He said, I'm in business because of all the great books that were there in their heart, but they never took the time. They were too busy to write that book. And, you know, there are great books in people right now. They're in their heart, but they never take the time. And as I mentioned, out of 11 books I've penned, they've all been written on wasted time. And, you know, when it comes to children, I have three great children who love God. Two of them are pastoring the churches, one of L.A.
Right.
You know, the Dream Center has become a national phenomenon, spread off to about 200. George Bush has been here, visited, called it his example of the points of light. The other one, Luke.
Oh, you mean George H.W. Bush, then?
Yes.
Okay.
And they loved this place. So now, as I look back over it, my children, when I was young and younger, raising a family, I found out that you can throw a lot of balls in a half hour. Mm. You can buy your daughter a dress in a half hour. Mm. You can get mighty close to somebody. You can show a lot of love in a half hour. Kids don't like to spend a half a day with adults. Adults are boring to them, but they love half hours. So I think half hours are the secret of raising great children. I remember I used to go to all my boys' football practices, not just their games and their basketball practices and their recitals. I just stopped by maybe a half hour every night and watch them. You know what they remember about their dad? They don't remember the sermons I preach, but they remember the half hours.
Mm. Okay, we are almost out of time, but I've got to ask you about this. I thought this was phenomenal because I've gone to some of these meetings that can just last for hours and hours and hours. And you told a story about a Presbyterian elder who was a very busy, successful businessman. And he said, okay, you want me to be an elder? I'm willing to do that. But after 2 hours, I'm leaving the meeting, finished or not. And he would do it time after time after time. Tell us about that. And he forced them to change.
That's exactly right. He just front said, I'm not going to spend longer than 2 hours, and no one believed it. They thought, well, you know, that's nice. But the first meeting he was at 2 hours, he just got up and left. And the next meeting he was at, they did it again. He got up and left. It changed that board. They now end on time. They end ahead of time.
Mm.
And I think it's really true of pastors. We need to learn that people's attention span is not very long.
Right.
So much time is wasted in church on announcements that were not planned and introductions of people that do not need introductions. And I have found that if you respect people's time, then they'll be more faithful. You see, because those people are dying when they sit there. When they come to church and they give you an hour and 15 minutes of their time, they are giving you their life. They are dying there in the seat. They deserve to have a well-thought-out, planned, anointed, prayed-over service.
Mm. And that's a great point to end on. Again, the name of the book is The Power of a Half Hour. Take back your life 30 minutes at a time. And I should note that it has a study guide at the end, and there's also a personal action plan as well. Thank you so much, Tommy Barnett, for being with us. God bless you now.
Thank you so much, my friend.
All right. Is there a website, by the way, for the book or
yes, there
for
is,
your ministry?
It's on Amazon. It's on Barnes & Noble's, all the great places. We introduced it at Today's Show with Kathy Gifford last week. And
oh, wow.
They tell me they're selling the books out and reordering at Walmart.
All right. Well, all the best to you. God bless.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you now. Appreciate that. Again, Tommy Barnett. And again, the name of the book, The Power of a Half Hour. That kind of rhymes. Take back your life 30 minutes at a time. And we are going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking with an apologist of the Christian faith, Alex McFarland, who deals with a lot of young people in helping them to articulate why it is they believe what they believe if they are indeed Christians. We'll be back in a moment with more on Vocal Point.